After all, even the press should read the books before they attempt to express any opinion, because if they just blare out an accusation without having read the books, then how can they possibly know what they are talking about? Not that they do in any case, but let us be fairly polite even to the pressmen. Q, what is this astral travel stuff you are always talking about? Is there anything to it? A, yes, there most definitely is, there absolutely definitely is. But it is a very difficult thing to explain to a person who doesn't want to believe, wherein the case of a sighted person trying to explain to one who was born blind the difference between, let us say, orange and pink, or two shades of green. How would you explain to a person who had never had sight what was the difference between a cabbage green and a lettuce green? Or the difference in color between an orange and a lemon? How would you set about it? I have already said that you can liken the human body to a motor vehicle, and the soul or astral body, whichever you like to call it, can be likened unto the driver of the vehicle. Now, if you go out driving and then you return, you switch off the engine of your car and the car stays in a certain spot. You get 111 out and go somewhere else. That is just how it is in astral travel. The physical body is tired out. Perhaps, you might have done a little work trying to chase up a scandal story or something, and then you have had a lot of entertainment. After that you are tired, and so you come home and you go to bed. That is like parking your car. You have parked your vehicle when you go to bed. Then you switch off, in other words, you go to sleep. But the driver, your soul, or your astral form, whichever you want to call it, leaves the body and goes elsewhere. It goes to a plane of existence where there are others also doing astral travel. Of course you come back to your body because you have a link, what is called the silver cord, which can be likened to a carrier wave in a radio program on which the ordinary program is superimposed. You get out of your physical body, then, and you travel away somewhere into the astral world. There you may meet a person whom you are going to meet in the flesh the next day, and you discuss things with that person. Then when you are back in the flesh and in the presence of the person, you think, funny thing. I'm sure I have lived through all this before. If you have done that, if you have made your contact in the astral, then your meeting goes very much more smoothly, as if it were foreordained, which it probably was. Many of the world's most successful men know the secret, consciously or unconsciously, of astral travel, and they are able to make contacts in the astral, so they pre-plan and prepare that which is going to be accomplished on the earth plane in the earth body in the following days. Because they prepared everything so thoroughly, there is no problem, everything runs smoothly, all decisions are cut and dried, and everyone falls into place with clockwork precision. Oh yes, definitely there is such a thing as astral travel. It is a very simple matter. Anyone can do it if they have faith and the patience to try a few elementary steps. But of course, if you are going to start off with a whole load of disbelief and dislike and all that sort of thing, then you will not remember your astral travels. I state quite definitely that everyone does astral travel, because you wouldn't imagine a fellow parking his car. 112. And just sitting in the thing until next day, would you? He would have to get out and stretch his legs. He would have to get out and have food or something. In just the same way, every person gets out of the body and into the astral, but many people do not remember their experiences because they are afraid to, or because they don't believe in such things. Some people have dreams. Now, frequently the dreams are rationalizations of what actually happened. The person is a doubter to start with and just would not believe the possibility of astral travel, and so as a solution to what would be a difficult problem, the subconscious of the doubter cooks up a fantastic image or dream which truly is stranger than anything that could happen in real life. Dreams, then, are either the rationalization of an astral experience or the mindless wandering thoughts of a body of which the soul or astral form is away. Away so far that no check is being kept in the mental processes of the sleeping form. Again I say, yes, you can do astral travel consciously. Everyone can do it when they sleep. Not everyone remembers it. People with a little training can do it while they are awake. It is very, very interesting. The biggest difficulty is that you cannot carry anything with you, which is a bit inconvenient at times. So you want to ask more questions, do you? Well, in this instance I will answer your questions because as I said, I propose to use this material in the book which I am now writing for the English version and which I started about a month ago. Your first question then, Q, what is your comment on pollution, its causes, its problems, its effect, and its solution? A. Undoubtedly there is a very grave problem with pollution, but of course everything is entirely man-made. Nature doesn't cause pollution. Nature tried to overcome pollution. First of all, man is depleting the atmosphere of oxygen. In Brazil, one of the rainforests is being cut down, and it is estimated that if that is done, as now planned, there will be in 30 years' time one-third less oxygen in the air than there is today. That is a very serious thing indeed, because the less the oxygen, the more the pollution. So humans are committing 113. Suicide in bulk. There are other problems which arise when forests are cut down. The Americans found that after they cut down their wooded areas, they had dust bowls as the result. Trees, in addition to providing oxygen for the atmosphere, also hold the topsoil together. The roots of a tree go deep into the topsoil and hold the soil together so that it cannot blow away. The trees also help in the conservation of moisture in the soil. They keep the ground alive. But when the trees are cut down, there is nothing to hold the soil together. The nature of the whole area changes and it becomes more arid. And so the soil dries out, and because of the lack of moisture, the grains of earth do not adhere together. The winds come and there is nothing to stop the winds, and they sweep across the face of the barren earth, carrying off the soil. It may be blown into the rivers, it may be blown into the sea, but anyway, in just a short time, what was a fertile, healthy region becomes a barren desert made so by man. One of the biggest troubles with the earth is this awful petroleum muck, that is indeed a curse. Steam engines are the things, because steam does not pollute and the moisture in steam returns to the earth and helps it, whereas the horrid fumes of petroleum products poison everything, everything. Look at a jet plane taking off a landing. Look at the filthy stuff spewing out astern, dropping out oily film over everything in its path. 50 years ago there were steam-propelled motor vehicles, the old Stanley steamer for example. Well, nothing can approach that at the present time. The Stanley steamer was extremely comfortable and exceptionally fast. It had great power and it did not at any time under any condition pollute the atmosphere nor pollute the earth. But vested interests, money, madmen, killed the steam car and instead started a bit of race suicide by producing petroleum-run engines, leading to cancer and all the other types of illness to which mankind is now so very prone. If mankind, with its insensate lust for money, goes on producing all these devilish chemicals and synthetics, then soon there will be no life on this earth. Many of the synthetic compounds are lethal indeed. Our lakes and rivers are polluted. 114. They are just masses of flowing poison. In many areas people can no longer bathe in the rivers nor swim from the beaches because the pollution is so bad. Ships making landfall encounter great masses of floating garbage. Seamen can tell right away when they are approaching land. They don't need radio because they can tell by the discoloration of the waters miles from the land. You ask what can be the solution. Well, there is a solution, you know, there is a solution to all our problems. Mankind will have to return to a religion. It doesn't matter what religion it is as long as it is a religion, because religion gives one the necessary spiritual discipline with which one can regulate one's own acts. Truly religious people would not put money before the health of others. They would attempt to conserve life instead of just to accumulate cash. There would have to be a return to nature, to natural things. People would have to return to the countryside instead of going off like sheep to the cities. There are vast tracts of land virtually uninhabited because people do not want to work the land. They want to stick in some stinking factory making products which poison the population. That would have to be changed. The farmers have little status in the social scheme of things, and they would have to be given status before they could again attract workers to their farms. Many years ago, when the Earth was young, the atmosphere was very different from what it is now. Human life as we know it at present could not live under such conditions because there were sulfur vapors from raging volcanoes, there were gaseous stenches from quaking bogs where methane and all the rest of it was ejected into the atmosphere. The atmosphere, too, was much heavier, much denser than it is at present. With the passage of many centuries, the atmosphere changed and became purer. As vegetation flourished on the earth, more and more oxygen was poured into the skies, and human life developed in a manner which could make the best use of that oxygen. But now oxygen is being denied us, pollution is being substituted, lung complaints are on the increase, health is deteriorating, and unless there be a return to the simpler things of life with an outlawing of petroleum products and an outlawing of some of these devilish synthetics. 115. Human life could soon become extinct. It could become extinct by the year 2000. But every country is vying with every can try to put more pollution into the skies. They call it social progress. Countries are in competition with each other, how much of the forests can be cut down to be made into paper for useless newspapers. I have long stated that the press is the most evil force on this earth. And I firmly believe so, and one of the ways in which the press is evil is that it uses such a vast amount of paper. Paper, for newspaper use, comes from trees, the flesh of trees, and the greater the demand for newspapers and their sensational contents, the greater the demand for trees. And so more and more do men go out into the wild earnest to search for forests which so far have not been touched. As the tree men go out over the land, they leave a scene of desolation behind them, a scene like something on the moon, craters where tree stumps have been pulled out, rocks where the soil is blown away. So unless the trend can be reversed, unless trees are planted instead of felled, well, you might as well say goodbye to human life, you might as well say goodbye to all life on this earth until a new type of person can be produced which can live under these stinking conditions. It does not refer just to human life but to all life. In the seas and in the rivers, fish are dying from pollution, in the air birds are dying from eating polluted fish. It all comes back, one must have a return to religion and a return to the land. Nowadays men and women rush off to work, scrabble for money. Their children, the future race, are just more or less abandoned on the streets to fend for themselves, to live under the domination of the stronger characters who, all too often, are evil characters. And so all the time conditions are becoming worse and worse and worse. If we want to have a beautiful orchard, then one goes in for selective pruning, selective grafting, selective planting. If one wants the best type of stock, horses or cows or anything else, then one sees that the breeding is controlled. Unsatisfactory stock is not permitted to breed, to reproduce its own species of defective creature, yet humans, the lords of creation, live according to a reversed order. The scruffier the human, the crummier their morals and their brain power, the 116. More children they have and the more abandoned those children are because both parents are busily scrabbling for money. But the vested interests make this artificial state of affairs. If there is going to be mass production, then there must be plenty of money to buy things. If the man only is working, he either does not get enough money to buy all they want, or rather, all they think they want, or the factories do not have enough cheap labor, and so women are more or less drilled into thinking that they haven't enough to live on. So mother and father, husband and wife, work in the factories and the children are neglected and the race becomes worse and worse. It is like livestock deteriorating under haphazard breeding. The only solution is that the leaders of the world should form some world government. The religious teachers of the world should cease fighting among themselves and they should try to do something for humanity. They should teach that salvation doesn't live in a factory but on the land, and unless there can be a return to religion then there is no hope whatever for the earth. Q. What do you think about students' protests, all kinds of protests in universities, etc.? I really think that these university students have a quite inflated idea of themselves. Let us look at the question properly. If people are going to school, and a university is only a school, then it means that they don't know everything or they wouldn't be going to school. It is a matter of complete amazement to me that these students, school kids, dare to think that they have the power to set the world right. It seems to me that they should occupy their time in studying so that when they have completed their studies and passed examinations to prove it then, and then only, should they set about reorganizing the world. By that time they will know something about it, so they will just put up and shut up. I have no sympathy whatever with these school kids who think they know so much that they can, let us say, outmaneuver Churchill and people of similar status. Q. What of strikes and unions in general? A. I think there should be no strikes. Strikes are a vicious form of blackmail. At the time I am writing this, I am here in 117. Montreal, which is a sick city indeed, a sick city in a sick province where strikes and violence seem to be the everyday method of life. So far as I can see, strikes cause the workers to lose money and the employer to lose money. There should be arbitration, there should be definite legal courts, industrial courts which settle the problem. But in my life I have met a few union organizers and I would prefer to call them stinking goons. It seems to me that the average union man is scared stiff of the union goon, enforcer, and if I were approached by any of these goons I would soon report it to the police. But it does seem to me that the unions are run for the benefit of the union leaders because, from what I have heard, the more the union leaders get for their members the more they demand for themselves. We get cases of jury tampering, we get cases where innocent work people are attacked with iron bars. Well, how can one justify the existence of unions? I think they should be banned by law just as strikes should be banned by law. Many years ago in England workers had a much better system, they had guilds who helped them, and I think all workers should have specialized guilds and not unions. In other words, I am definitely opposed to unions. Just a short time ago there was a hospital strike and more than one medical friend told me, oh yes, we know that many people died through the withdrawal of hospital service. But what can we do about it? We know about it. But if we try to make a case about it, the unions will call the people out on strike again and it will just be worse. I needed to go to hospital during the strike and, of course, because of the strike I couldn't go, so perhaps I am biased against such strikers. But I cannot help hoping that sometime when there is a strike some of the strikers' relatives are the losers. Q. The violence in the world, what do you think about that? What can be done about it? A. Of course the violence in the world is a simple matter to explain. People are being given false values. Religion is being torn down. People no longer believe in the simple things of life. They listen to the radio. They watch terrible things on 118 television, and they read the gory details in the sensational press. So people are conditioned by the radio, conditioned by television programs. And, of course, hotted up by the press who glorify in gore. You get people watching a TV program and they see some highly mythical house in Hollywood and they think, why should they have a house like that and not me? I should have the same. I want a Cadillac, a houseboat, a speedboat, and an aeroplane. And so they get discontented. Discontent breeds discontent, and eventually gangs set up, robberies are done. People are kidnapped, people go in for law cases for all manner of imaginary complaints. At present one sportswoman is suing a club for a few million dollars. More than she could make in 10 lifetimes. But people have an altogether inflated idea of their worth. $1 million nowadays seems hardly anything when it comes to making claims. But that, of course, is caused by the press. the press egg people on to do these foolish things because if the people didn't have such crazy ideas, the press would have less to write about. Many years ago I was told that the press didn't want the truth. They wanted to print what people thought they should read. They wanted sensation, and I was told that no matter if I wouldn't give an interview would be dreamed up. Here is a little example. Last week a Tibetan woman was widely quoted in the local press. It was stated that she gave an interview to the press and said all manner of remarkable things. But the woman complained that she hadn't even met a pressman. No pressman at all had approached her. There had been no interview except in the press reporter's imagination. Having suffered from that myself, I quite believe her, and I do not believe the press on principle. But the violence is caused by lack of parental supervision. The fathers and the mothers work in the factories, and after that they have to rush to the pubs or to bingo or to anywhere else, and the children, legitimate or illegitimate, are left to fend for themselves on the streets and to be contaminated by the stronger and usually more evilly disposed youths who rise out of the maelstrom. Again, only a return to religion can save this world. The 119. Human animal is deteriorating, becoming less and less able to decide which is right and which is wrong. The religions of the present day are staffed by men with clay feet, not able to teach religion but instead more intent on dabbling in politics and presumably getting a bit more money from that. Priests should be priests. Priests should attend to a person's soul. They should not bother with a person's politics. So it is. You have asked me a question, and I say that unless there be a return to religion and a definite censorship of the press, there is no real hope for humanity, which is all the time deteriorating. Q. What do you think of the Vietnam War? A. Well, I would like to heartily congratulate the Vietnamese. I think it is highly amusing that what the Americans have regarded as poor, ignorant little colored men can stand off first all the might of France, and now all the might of America. America cannot win in Vietnam so long as the people there are of good spirits. What is the point of dropping 100,000 tons of bombs on marshland? It makes a frightfully muddy splash, agreed, but it doesn't do much harm. The real type of war is that which the Vietnamese fight, guerrilla war. And if the Vietnamese were as vicious as the Americans pretend, believe me, the Vietnamese would chase the Americans out of Vietnam as if their pants were on fire, because the Americans, well, there seems to be a lot of graft out there. The Vietnamese go about their particular tasks trying to ensure that their country continues in the way they want it, not in the way the Americans want it. 120. Chapter 7. Mr. Tully gave a slight start as the old man said, "Well, that's it. I've answered all the questions I'm going to answer." Mr. Tully fidgeted about, shuffled his feet, and fiddled with his doodles, then said, "My. Why don't you have carpets on the floors? It's so cold in here. You could buy carpets cheaply, you know. Wait a minute, I'll tell you a place where you can get them at a very, very cheap price." The old man snorted and said, "But I've just been explaining. I don't go in for luxuries, so I am not interested in getting carpet." Mr. Tully fidgeted around and then he said, "What we must get a television crew here and make a little film of you. Everybody wants to see you on TV." The old man nearly jumped off his bed in annoyance. "Oh no, I'm not interested in TV. I am not interested at all in the idiot box or the idiots who watch it. I think, second only to the press, television is the greatest curse of our time. It pretends to show people the better things of life, but instead it just gives people dissatisfaction." Mr. Tully said, "Well, can I bring my Bolex sign camera here and lights, and my recorder, and you say just a few words, just a few words? It'll help me so much if you'll do just that, and it won't inconvenience you at all." The old man thought about it and was getting heartily sick of the whole affair. It was another of those instances of give man an inch and he'll take a mile, but at last he said, "All right, provided that you and you alone come, you can bring your camera and you can bring your recorder, but understand this, If you bring a television crew with you, the door will not. 121. Be opened. The next day, the big powerful car of Mr. Telly swooshed by with a rush of displaced air and a loud zooming noise. Minutes after, he came running along the stone corridor, red in the face with exertion, draped about with cameras, lights, and carrying a recorder in his hand. I've come," he said, stressing what was already distressingly obvious. With considerable expertise, he set up his lights, set up his camera, and got his recorder working. He seemed to be like the mythical McNamara's band, or a one-armed juggler. The lights were bright, and Miss Cleopatra came along and sat beside the old man so that she, too, should have her photograph taken. And after Miss Cleopatra had made her debut on the film, Fat Cat Taddy was woman handled in, because Fat Cat Taddy doesn't like cameras or any interruption to her standard routine, which is normally eat, rest, but Fat Cat Taddy had to come and be on the film as well. The old man said his very few words in English, and Mr. Tilly eventually rushed away again. He seemed to be jet propelled always, and peace descended upon the somewhat shaken household. Later the film was shown on French language television. Again an extremely small minority made extremely bad statements. The mail came swamping in, swamping Mr. Telly and swamping the old man, and about 99.9% were in favor, were interested, etc. But just one or two petty-minded people wanted to make difficulties because the old man spoke in English and not in French, and, they said, if he did not want to speak in French, then he should not have been on French language television. It is such a pity that these French Canadians are so insistent about their own language. After all, they want business. They are trying to do business with the USA and other countries, but they are setting as a condition that USA firms and firms in other countries shall speak only in French. My own opinion, for what it is worth, is that the French language should be scrapped for business in Canada and just kept for the amusement of those few people who want to speak some form of French. It is my opinion that if a person is a Canadian, he 122. Should be a Canadian first, second, and third. He should deal with the natural language of the country, which is English, and not play games with pseudo-linguistics. I put on record here and now, I have no sympathy with French Canadians, no sympathy with their very, very aggressive attitudes and their insistence in putting themselves forward, right in the forefront at all times, irrespective of the rights and feelings of other people. Conditions were becoming increasingly difficult. It seemed to the old man that every time he went out there was some pressman or other hiding behind every pillar. The number of callers to the door increased, all manner of strange excuses were made by which the caller hoped to get to meet Lobsang Rampa. For several nights two men were perched like broody hens on a little wall outside the old man's bedroom window. One night they used a long, thin stick and kept tapping in the glass of the window, tapping to attract his attention so that, hopefully, he would be lured to put aside the curtains and peer out. One of the men always had his camera and flash gun ready. That system not working, they tried the other one, in which one man let off flash bulbs at the window while the second man with the camera stood ready with his flash gun and camera so that a photograph could be taken. But, again, without success. But these pressmen had all manner of nice little tricks designed, quite unsuccessfully as it happened, to lure the old man to the window so that a photograph could be taken of him, perhaps in his pajamas. Sometimes a handful of gravel would be tossed against the window. First there would come the pattering of two or three grains of sand, then two or three more, and then perhaps a handful of loose sand thrown violently and with extreme exasperation. But, no, the curtain was never drawn aside for their delectation, because these people never seemed to understand that there are other ways of watching people than peering out through a window. These people were so avid in their watch on just one window that they forgot there were other windows, they forgot that there were other people in other apartments who could report what was happening. 123. Ing. But matters were becoming intolerable. It was extremely embarrassing to go out anywhere, to go into the city, because of the people accosting, because of people who were nodding and smiling. It was extremely embarrassing to go out in a taxi because all one's private affairs seemed now to be public affairs through the French language newspapers and the French language television.